You're listening to Star Wars Splash Page Comics in Review.
This is episode number 252, and we are here to talk about all the Star Wars comics with you and Jeff. Hi, Jeff.
Geek me all knowing box sets stay open May 4th. I'm hoping Luke gonna be hot as before, cause Ren looks hardcore, and I don't want Sith running the galaxy.
Hi, Matt. How long have we been doing Splash Page? I still almost called it Comics with Kenobi when I was doing the intro. I didn't get it.
Almost, what, 2.5, 3 years since we've been doing?
Yeah, at least. So we have two and a half books to discuss. We have The Monster of Temple Peak from IDW that we'll give a cursory glance to. Then we have Darth Vader, Volume 3, number, 14? No, 16. Number 16. And we have War of the Bounty Hunters, Boosh number 1, also known as One of One.
Exactly. A one-shot. Got to love it when I'm done.
But before that, Matt, do we have any news to speak of?
Just only that StarWars.com released a very early look at the December solicits for Marvel Comics. As was to be expected, Crimson Rain, which is part 2 of the Soul Trilogy, features prominently, but there's also some great covers from the High Republic Trail of Shadows number 3. The High Republic number 12, of course, has an amazing cover by Phil Noto that shows Lorna D holding a lightsaber that looks suspiciously like, oh, I don't know. Keeve Trennis's, so we'll find out.
Oh, boy.
Yeah. And then on the cover of Star Wars 20, we see Luke holding up what appears to be a Jedi holocron with Yoda emanating from it. Then there is a very dastardly dark-looking cover for Darth Vader 19 by Ryan Stegman that shows him holding his red lightsaber. And then Bounty Hunters is going to be very interesting. Of course, Ramon Box is taking over art on Bounty Hunters because Paolo Villanelli has said on Twitter that he's taking a short break. He will be back, though. It looks like a certain mechanical bounty hunter that we both like is not in this issue either. We know that Tonga's team of bounty hunters, which includes Bosk, Zuckus, and Tazu Leech, are there. Be careful when you read these solicits because it's going to give a little spoilers, it looks like. And of course, there is an amazing cover for Dr. Aphra number 17 by Sarah Pacelli. Again, all in red. It just looks like she's bearing the brunt of some sort of explosive force while holding these very odd-shaped horns. Is she the victim of an ancient cult? We will find out. So, should be interesting.
Interesting.
Yeah. Speaking of the High Republic, I think we're supposed to get another The High Republic show later this week on StarWars.com. And I am calling it, I think, and I predict that IDW is going to announce another High Republic comic book series. So,
and I would not surprise me. It's being well received all over the place. So.
Yeah, so I think we will probably hear about that from the host of the High Republic show. So,
if it's up to the same quality as High Republic Adventures, I'm all for it.
Yeah, if I'm wrong, I'm wrong. There's that on my face, but
it would be the first time.
I'm willing to take that chance. So there you go. Last but not least, check out the Star Wars comics subreddit on Reddit. We posted a link to this on the Facebook page and Twitter, but a user custom modded a 3.75-inch Darth Vader figure to look like Vader did in Darth Vader Volume 3, Number 9, where he had to sort of cobble himself together on Mustafar.
It looked amazing, too.
Yeah, the pictures were really, really incredible. So, but that's it. Like Jeff said, 3 comics out today. Darth Vader 16, War of the Bounty Hunters, Boosh, number 1, and Star Wars, The High Republic Adventures, The Monster of Temple Peak, number 2 of 4.
This is 2 of 4. And this, and again, remind me, this was originally supposed to be just a long graphic novel.
It was supposed
but they
to
broke
be
up into four.
Yeah. And of course, what's funny is, you know, they'll probably, you know, more than likely release it as a trade paperback. So it'll be a graphic novel.
And I'm sure it will work better that way. So here's my, here's, you know, we talked about it last time. I talked about how the pacing of it didn't really work for me. And it's more much the same here. The book is gorgeous. I'm sure the story is going to end up being a lot of fun, but it, it's obvious not, it was not written in a serialized format. This is like, okay, so did you see The Hateful Eight, the Tarantino film?
I did. I did, actually.
Okay. Did you watch it when they released it on Netflix as a four-part series?
I did, and I regretted it.
Me too. They just added a few scenes here and there, and it just does not work because there's not a, there's not an end point, a break point every, what, 45 minutes to an hour for them to go to the next episode. There's nothing that compels you to keep going. And I have much the same reaction here. This feels like just a book that was just chopped up into fourths with no regard for pacing or anything.
Oh,
so I think I'm probably going to have a better opinion of it once the whole thing is released.
Yeah. And let's be upfront here. This is a lush book. It is gorgeously illustrated. And of course, Kevin Scott is writing it. Pencils and ink are by Rachel Stott. The paints are what really makes this book stand out. And the paints are by Vita Efremova and Nicola Righi. Production and design is by Johanna Natalie. The assistant editor on the book is Riley Farmer. And the editor on the book is Heather Antos. And essentially what we're seeing here throughout this part is, you know, Ty is facing a weaver, you know, a rock, you know,
it's a spider. It's a space spider that Jeff hates.
Well, that's fine. That's fine. You feel free. So, but, and you know, we get some interesting, you know, like I said, just, you know, this, some great fight scenes here. It evokes to me Samwise Gamgee's fight with Shelob, in the Lord of the Rings.
Very much so.
And, you know, and in the end of the novel, of course. And again, it's just amazing. And, you know, we find Ty, you know, confronting, you know, her urge to succeed, but also having to deal with the fact that there's only so far that her, she can only push herself so far before she becomes, if you will, you know, a danger to herself. So we do find that she finds Druin from the first issue, that kid from Blaroom. He is apparently,
make himself invisible.
Stowed away on her ship. And yeah, he can make himself invisible. So, which is very interesting. And again, it's an intriguing story. And of course, if you are a fan of the High Republic, you are going to devour it lustily from page to page. And it almost becomes, with Ty having to deal with this kid, because he's like, you're a Jedi. And she's like, no, I'm not a Jedi.
It's interesting that I made The Hateful Eight.
It's almost like not a buddy cop movie, but kind of like a buddy cop movie, except, the cop has picked up a partner that, you know, she doesn't like, so.
Well, it's funny that I made the reference to The Hateful Eight because, like The Hateful Eight, it takes place on the main story takes place in a blizzard, really, in a very cold environment, and the storyline is non-linear. The timeline is non-linear because we get a lot of flashbacks.
Oh, yeah.
So it is. Yeah. It's interesting that I made that comparison. And again, I feel like my words have been kind of harsh. I am holding out my final verdict on it until I'm able to read the whole thing in its entirety, because it really does just feel like I'm getting snippets of a story rather than chapters. I don't even feel like I'm getting chapters. I feel like I'm just getting one part of a story, then the second part, and I don't know. I'm just waiting. Kudos to the creative team at all. The dialogue is great. I think where the story is going, I think is going to be very interesting. I'm just not sold on it yet because of the way it's being presented to me.
Yeah, and I have to agree with you. This is something that I will, you know, when it is released, you know, the fourth issue is out, I will sit down and consume all four issues at once. And I think that the impact will be far more, well, for lack of a better word, impactful. One interesting thing about this issue, though, is that, there's really no variant covers, except there is an online exclusive cover, which is very interesting. And of course, you know, we're recording this on Monday, so, you know, we won't see anything until Wednesday when the book is released. So I'm curious to see what that's going to entail as, you know, if somebody who buys it on Comixology, for example, you know, or buys it through IDW's website digitally, you know, are they going to get that exclusive cover? So it just be interesting to see. So because
there's been
really nothing mentioned about it whatsoever, you know, in the run up to the release of this issue. So that said, so shall we jump into
Darth Vader number 16, because this is the way it's listed in the back of the book, in the order for which it should be written, or it should be read, I should say.
Definitely. And I gotta tell you, reading this issue, it feels like it's like watching a movie in 4D. Because, you know, we are approaching some of the events in this issue for the third time, you know, except we're getting a different viewpoint.
I guess, how many times can we see the same story from the same perspective and not feel like filler?
Well,
Jeff's being a real grumpy Gus this week, folks, but go ahead, Matt.
No, it's just, you know, I mean, the first two or three pages we've seen before. But we're just seeing it from a different vantage point, and, you know, and we're setting it up through the lens of this particular series, and the way Greg Pak is writing it, you know, and of course, you know, and having to write it in tandem with this crossover event. So, written by Greg Pak, art, as always, by Rafael Ionco, colors by Jason Keith and Rochelle Rosenberg, letters are by Virtual Calligraphy's Joe Caramagna. The main cover is by Aaron Cooter and Richard Isanove. There is a Lucasfilm 50th anniversary variant by Chris Sprouse, Carl Story, and Niraj Menon. And there is a Starship Blueprint variant by Paolo Villanelli and Mattia Iacono. Tom Groneman and Danny Kazam are the assistant editors. Mark Panizia is the editor. For Lucasfilm, we've got senior editor Robert Simpson, creative director Michael Seglain. Art director is Troy Alders. For the story group, we've got Pablo Hidalgo, Matt Martin, and Emily Schuchani. And then, of course, from the Lucasfilm art department is Broaxium's number one fan, Phil Shostak. And again, if you read the last issue of Star Wars, if you read the last issue of The War of the Bounty Hunters, you know what's coming. But what we do is we open up, and it's Vader talking to Luke. Luke, who has already said, has told Leia, Lando, and Chewie, I can't fight Vader on the ground and in person. I'm not ready. You know, he's too strong for me. So I'm going to pull a feint here, fly away, and you guys grab Han. Now, of course, Han, as we know from the previous two issues, is aboard the Imperial shuttle making his way to the Executor, or is it the Executor? Essentially, we open up with Vader, I think, literally, you know, telling Luke, you know, Luke, my son, you yearn for a father. You know, and as he says this, we see Luke and we see Ben Kenobi, and then we see Vader split Ben Kenobi in half, you know, split his head in half. But you will not find him in me. And then, you know, we cut down and we see, you know, Vader says, so you cling to your friends. And of course, those friends being Leia, Han, and Chewbacca. As if you want to disappear in their company, as if you could snuff out the force within you that still fills you with so much fear. And then we see images of Luke bravely wielding his lightsaber. And of course, you know, underlying all this is this, you know, this red hue, this red flame smoke almost reminds me of Ralph Bakshi's Wizards. We see Vader holding his red blade, but none of us can escape who we are. So if you refuse my offer, you will end up more lost than you can ever imagine. And then he says that, and then we see Palpatine splitting Vader in half. So you will come to me now. And if you do not, and then you turn the page, I will cut your friend in half. You know, boom, Jakara aboard the Vermilion. And there's Vader holding his lightsaber above Han and Carbonite. So
that's where we left off last time and the time before that.
Yeah, and then we see again, you know, Lord Vader, you told us to allow that Rebel X-Wing to approach the Vermilion, but now it's fleeing. Your orders? And then, again, the highlight of the last few issues, has been Ochi of Bastogne. And, you know, just Ochi's, you know, again, he's the perfect toady. Ha ha ha, the boy fears you, my lord. And Vader says, no, but he will. And Vader walks off, you know, and we cut, and, you know, Luke is flying away in his X-Wing. And again, you know, it's what we've already seen. Luke, it's Leia again. Please tell me what's going on. I'm not strong enough yet, Leia. I can't beat Vader alone. And if I stay and fight, he'll kill all of you. So it's fine for him to just kill you? He won't do that. And then Lando says, oh boy. You just said you're not strong enough, Leia. He wants me to join him. And then this is critical, actually. You know, because this makes, you know, this sets a lot of foundation for Return of the Jedi. Yeah. Well, and then Leia responds, well, that makes this sound like an even worse plan. You're in the clear now, Leia. Save Han. And then, you know, he goes, I'll be fine. And, you know, as he says this, he's approaching a large ship in the foreground that we learn is, you know, that seems to be owned by Boss Orarab. But here's the thing. This is the first reference to Boss Orarab. And there's no detail on Boss Orarab. So I'm not sure which criminal syndicate Boss Orarab is with at all.
Right.
And what would have been really nice here in this panel, showing us the bridge of this enormous ship, you know, where we see a Rodian and we, you know, see, you know, some humans as well. What would have been really nice would have been an editor's note saying who Boss Orarab is and whom he's with. So, but, you know, the Rodian says, Captain, it's that T-65 again. That's the model that Boss Orarab's been hungry for. And it's within range of our Magna harpoons. Well, what are you waiting for? Let her rip. So they fire off some Magna harpoons. It gets,
yeah,
you
instead,
know,
instead of a tractor beam, they, yeah, literally just hook it.
Yeah, literally. It's like, it's, you know, it's like the snow speeders in Empire Strikes Back, not toppling down the AT-ATs or AT-ATs, depending on how you say it. And, you know, Luke gets hit and looks like one of the harpoons, grazes R2.
Yeah, clip something, and, yeah.
And then, you know, it's like, oh, and, you know, Luke's, no, they got us. And then all of a sudden we see these yellow greenish laser blaster bolts. He's like, aha, whoa, looks like we might have a friend out here or not.
Or not. That's my favorite part of the book.
That's a great line.
Vader sitting, you seeing Vader through the window of the eyeball of his tie.
And I love that because think about it. This is the first time in the original trilogy era that we have seen this TIE fighter since the end of A New Hope.
True.
Think about it. I mean, am I wrong?
I'm not sure. I'm trying to remember if he's flown it anywhere else. I have to imagine that we have, but it may just be because I've seen this book, the same story three times, that I'm thinking, yeah, well, you know, that's not the case.
I take that back. The Vader Down crossover, I think he had his advanced TIE there. So, but I love seeing the advanced TIE, you know, because I have a sentimental attachment to that toy.
No,
when I got that toy, I was like, whoa, this is so cool. So even though it did not have a completely solid, you know, middle. So, but,
right.
And then what transpires is just, you know, Vader's gunning for him. And Luke is like, uh-oh. And, you know, he's like, you know, and Luke's just like, well, you know, R2, didn't you hear what I told Leia? He's not trying to kill us. We lead him out into space and krakoom, skrakoom.
Right.
Knocks the X-Wing out of the sky. Yeah, knocks the X-Wing out of the sky. Luke is able to recover it, you know, and get the X-Wing down to the ground without actually crashing. You know, they pop out. He, you know, Luke's on top of the ship. R2, wee, I'm fine. How's the ship? Boop, boop, boop. Oh, no. And then Vader's coming at him. And so great bottom panel here by Raphael, you know, and Brian, you know, just, you know, with the way Brian and Rochelle or Jason and Rochelle are coloring. That's the way I say Brian, you know, and he starts shooting up at Vader's tie and we turn the page and, you know, again, we're seeing Han carted off and Boku's a little irked, you know, this isn't what we agreed upon, Ochi. Vader was supposed to support my bid for Solo. Instead, he's stolen Solo for himself. You told me Vader keeps his word. And Ochi, very smugly, arms crossed.
True lackey fashion, yeah.
If I remember right, all my lord ever promised was that you might get what you deserve. If you ask me, you're getting off pretty easy. How? Hold that thought, Slug, because then Ochi looks over and he sees Sly Moore. I've got another loser to attend to right now. And if this dialogue was coming from anybody else, I would have been like, huh? But from Ochi, it's perfect.
Oh, yeah, it works.
Because he's such the sycophant. And then yes. We cut to the lower left panel with Sly Moore. Lord Vader, can you hear me? I do not require your assistance, Administrator Moore. Do not worry, Lord Vader. I'm not helping you. and then we see the droid Crush, the pirates of the droid Crush, fall down onto his tie and just start going all buzz droid on him. And there's so many of them. And then there's the lead one is like, ha ha ha, we've tagged him, Administrator. Thanks for the distraction. Perfect. I knew the droid Crush would eventually prove their worth. And then, of course, Ochi attacks. Traitor! And she goes, never! And so he has to, Ochi fights a droid Crush again. Because you remember, when Darth Vader encountered Ochi, it was with droid Crush pirates. So,
oh, right. Yeah, that's where I've heard the term before. I couldn't quite remember.
Don't tell me I didn't hear what I heard. And you're trying to kill Vader. I serve the Empire, Ochi. Which means I serve the Emperor in all things, at all times. You used to understand that. And Sly is, she's doing a really good job of dodging and parrying with Ochi. And then we cut back and we see the view from Luke's perspective from behind. And we see a bunch of droid Crush pirates falling down. He's like, oh, who are you? Stop right there. And they're firing and boom, boom. And he ignites his yellow blade. I'm warning you. Calm down, boy. We're here to help. And they just... they swarm the X-Wing, and meanwhile, Vader is trying to, shoot the X-Wing but maybe not the X-Wing, but maybe the droids. And then it's all fixed. Get in, boy. Who are you guys? Why are you helping me? We just do what our clients tell us. So don't thank us. Thank the Empire, which is weird. And R2 says, who? And, Luke's got that look of, I know R2. And he's looking up out of the canopy and you know, he's got to be super confused. And then, course, we look, and this is a great full page here. Props to everyone involved in illustrating this one. Vader is pursuing Luke, and there are still droid Crush droids on top of his X-Wing firing at Vader. So,
yeah, this is, I love this one. Yeah, he says, but whatever, and although Luke's response is, but whatever it takes. And then Ochi and Sly are fighting one another, and Ochi's telling her to call them off, or you're dead. And Sly says, I thought you said Lord Vader couldn't be beaten. Says, oh, they can't beat him, but he wants that rebel. And I love the look, Sly flips off of here and says, yes, he does. Do you know why? She says, don't ask about what I don't need to know. I don't ask about what I don't need to know. And Sly says, he fears the boy because he knows the boy's true strength. If the Empire claims Skywalker, what need would he have
Empire,
a Vader?
If the Emperor claims
what need would he have a Vader? And I know she says, oh, you're really dead. And Sly is trying to explain to him, saying, you still don't understand. Vader cannot kill me without betraying the Empire. And Ochi says, you're the one who betrayed the Empire. And Sly says, no, I tested his weakest link and found it lacking. In your fear, you would destroy the Emperor's greatest weapon, but you have failed. And Ochi says, hey, don't try that mind trick thing on me. And Sly just stabbed him. He says, now in your fear, you'll return to your true master, humbled, like me, just another servant in his shadow. And I love that they're seeing a ship land and Sly says what?
Well, that ship's taken off and that's a
hunt. It's taking
ship.
Off. That's right. And
it's Boku's ship.
Okay, that's it. And Sly says what? And Ochi says, this is Ochi. Do you read? And Boku says, what do you want, Worm? He says, oh, nothing much. Just wanted to confirm that it's you, Boku. What's on your mind up there? Boku says, oh, I wouldn't want to spoil the surprise. And then Ochi calls Lord Vader and he says, this is a quick report because the Umbaran, and I know, killer. Right, working on that. But the Hutts are after the Imperial shuttle that's got Solo, and we see them all running after the shuttle.
Which we've seen before. Remember?
Exactly. So, and we see Luke, I don't know I don't know what he's seeing. He's seeing an explosion. And we see we read Vader's voiceover saying, my son, I sense your anguish. You still cannot bear the thought of losing your friends. Good. Now you're ready to learn what real fear is. And he's right on top of him, just bearing down. And we get it to be continued. And yeah, how much new story did we actually get here?
Well, we got maybe 7 or 8 pages of Vader trying to test Luke, if that much. And then we got some, you know, we've already known that Sly is sort of testing the weakest link. So, you know, so it's kind of like, huh.
You know, the action is great in this book, and you know, they're weaving in some new storylines with this character this crew that we've not seen before with the Magna, whatever they're called.
The Dread Crush.
No, the Magna Harpoons, that crew. The name that we didn't recognize.
Yeah, and you know, and if listeners, if you know who that is, please let us know. Send us a DM on Twitter or send us a message through the Facebook page, because I honestly don't know who that is.
It sounds vaguely familiar, but it may just be that it sounds Star Warsy, and that's why. But yeah, it's getting to the point where it feels like, and we'll talk about it a little bit with the Boosh book as well, it feels like we're getting a lot of filler in this crossover. We're getting to the part that I was afraid we were going to have.
Yeah, and of course, you know, we're barreling toward the end because, you know, we've got War of the Bounty Hunters number 5 coming out in what, 3 or 4 weeks. And you know, so it is starting to end, but I'm starting to think it probably should have ended like this week or next. So it's
right.
It's kind of like, I mean, I can understand and appreciate that they have to sort of flesh out the story arcs for the trade paperbacks for each of the individual series. And I also understand, you know, because they are, you know, it was probably, you know, it's the notion that maybe not everybody is not reading all of the books, you know, so there has to be a little sort of repeat to get people caught up, because then, you know, they may, you know, somebody may not have read the main Star Wars issue, you know, or somebody may not read this issue. So that's why they're doing it. But ultimately, though, I think we do get that thread that Pak is exploring here with this series. And that is, you know, Vader testing the tenuous links between his son and himself. But I would just like to see that a little bit more unfettered, you know, and not wrapped into all of this. So
agreed.
But, you know, again, you know, the art is just amazing. And, you know, and the new material that Pak has presented here, you know, again, you know, it's making Vader a must read book for the third time. You know, I mean, each of the three volumes of Darth Vader have just been very compelling. So, so that does give me hope.
Yeah, agreed. We'll see what happens next month with this book. This is the first one that I've really felt like is a bit of a misstep. So,
yeah.
Well, we'll take a short break and we'll see if War of the Bounty Hunters Boosh can redeem the week. Okay, so War of the Bounty Hunters, Boosh.
This is
definitely a War of the Bounty Hunters book because it's got that big banner on the top and that's part of the title.
It does, and it's got a tangential connection to the crossover event, but it's also a setup for Boosh the character. Now, I have to admit, I was very much on board when they announced that they were going to be doing this series, you know, of one-shots. You have Jabba, Boosh, Dengar, Zuckuss and Dengar, or Forlom and Zuckuss, you know, and of course IG-88. But the one I was really looking forward to was Boosh, because I have just always been fascinated by that character, because, you know, Boosh was Leia in Return of the Jedi, you know, it's like, you know, how did she get that outfit? You know, why would she even consider it? You know, of course, when we saw that great story that Jim and Alex did in a Star Wars comic, you know, but this issue.
Right. I kept thinking of that as I was reading this, and it makes the character much nobler, I guess.
Oh, yeah. But this issue, I think, is just really fascinating because
it makes me want an ongoing or at least a mini series about this.
You know, it really does, and I think,
and it makes me want a box set of action figures,
kind of like a box set of the entire crew. Totally, I would buy that. I would totally buy that. So Hasbro, if you're listening, which you're not, maybe you make that happen in 3 or 4 years, since that seems to how it works for Star Wars figures. Yeah, written by Alyssa Wong, who of course, as you know, is writing the second Dr. volume of Dr. Aphra. Art is by David Balion, Colors are by Israel Silva. Letters and the production is Virtual Calligraphy's Ariana Mayer. The main cover is by Mahmoud Asrar and Matthew Wilson. There is also a, like I said, a Starship Blueprint variant by Paolo Villanelli and Mattia Iacono. And there is a couple of other amazing variants, one by Phil Noto and another by Kerry Randolph and Emilio Lopez. Editor on this book is Tom Groneman. Senior editor for this book is Mark Panizio. Again, you know, same lineup for Lucasfilm. But this book, it gives us a double dose of very interesting information. We get a lot more detail about Domina Taga, but we also get some great information about Boosh, but not so much that we know everything about Boosh. I mean, you know, just all we know is is Boosh exiled, is Ubi's, and is from Uba 4. And that's pretty, you know, because they've done something. And to me, that's what makes this issue so compelling. So
we get, and I don't want to go too deep into this because I want people to read it. I want to force people to read this.
We're going to be a little shallow on this because this is a very intriguing book.
Yes.
And Alyssa has done amazing work fleshing out this character without fleshing out this character. I mean, there's a lot of threads that remain to be pulled. And I really, you know, yeah, I would like to see another one shot or even a 2 or 3 issue miniseries focusing on this crew. So
my only complaint with this book, it is a phenomenal book. I really enjoyed it. I don't know how much it has to do with the War of the Bounty Hunters. I guess we'll find out.
It has everything to do with the War of the Bounty Hunters. Because Domina Taga is, you know, has sent Jeslaki and Ariel to Crimson Dawn to take out Kray. And, you know, and at this point, Crimson Dawn is still, you know, it's like the Jedi. Spoken of, you know, like, you know, vague memories of, and that's it.
Right.
And this, of course, you know, helps set the scene for Crimson Dawn's return. So I think maybe we'll see more of Boosh in the Crimson Reign.
Yeah, it feels like it's setting something up, but as far as just information for this current story, I didn't feel like there was a whole lot, but I digest. Story opens up again, really great artwork, and story opens up with a sale of a stolen hot rod, for lack of a better word, Silver Core Speeder, one of only 24 in existence, and
the Batmobile of Star Wars.
Basically, yeah, really, really like it. And the people buying it get beset by Eleni, Herrick, Brene or Breen, Tans, and Boosh. And
this is a band I would pay good money to see.
Me too. And the vehicle has been stolen from the Black Sun. And the guy says, that's just stupid. And Boosh says, you're right. It is. And so they get it back. And then we see again, we meet, what is this character's name? I can't find it. Oh, the green hair. Oh, Deva.
Deva Lompop.
I could not remember her name. We see her again.
I had the mic on mute, so I was sitting here screaming at you, Deva Lompop, you idiot! Because you know she had her debut in the Jabba one shot, and you know, we also learned that you know she will appear in all of these Bounty Hunter one shots. Although this seems a little
shoehorned,
just a smidge.
Yeah, because she doesn't really do anything. She's just there.
Unless we're seeing some foreshadowing, you know, because they're having some conversations and Boosh is just like, well, it's none of your business, you know, it's none of your business, Deva. Well, I'm just saying hello. All that bad blood is going to catch up to you someday. Maybe I'll come after you.
If you're very unlucky. And we find out that, you know, Boosh has been down. They say you've been off all day, and Boosh is as fine as Kelm would have been 12 years old today. And gets a lot of support from the crew. Boss, I'm so sorry. So they go in and they're eating or they're drinking at this, at a tavern of some sort. And they're sharing stories, and we see that this is a crew that they're all exiles for one reason or another, but they're basically they formed a family here, a family unit, and they have one another's back.
And in just this one page, in just these several panels, we get a lot of really interesting backstory, but again, not revealing so much.
It's right, just, enough to tell us the setup. We get the setup for who they are.
I can't believe it's been 6 years since I joined your crew. 7 since being exiled from Uba 4. Well, I've only been exiled for 3 years, but does it ever get easier? I'm afraid not, Tans. Not in the 5 years since I was banished, anyway. Your father had it coming, Illini. Yeah, but you didn't have to help me hide the body. I'd do it again, love. I was like, oh my God.
Yeah.
That was so adroitly written.
It was. This whole thing is great, and we don't see any faces. And we get this in voiceover, being exiled from Uba 4 cost us everything. All traces of our lives were erased from public record. Our families won't even speak our names. As exiles, we wear this armor as a mark of shame. It doesn't matter why we did what we did, only that we committed a crime. And we see that, Bush has burned down a village, and we're convicted. Adjusting to life with Uba 4 was a culture shock. We struggled. We were desperate. And desperate people do desperate things, and that's where we're there meeting with someone representing Crimson Dawn.
But even then, we don't know if Bush burned down the village,
True.
I mean,
all that matters is that they committed a crime and were convicted. That's true. That's very true.
Yeah. So
this person named Margo aboard the Vermilion has hired them.
You know Margo. You've seen Margo before.
We have.
You've seen her in War of the Bounty Hunters. She is, exactly. She is Kira's majordomo.
So she offers him 200,000 credits to kill off the 8 members on the board of the TAG Corporation. And they're never in the same place except this one time when they're going to be their executive board. And so, we see everything. So they hire them all and they say there are generations of blood on their hands. We get, the whole backstory with the TAGs. So if you don't know, now you know. And if you do know, you're reminded. And Margo says, I've heard the UBs are an honorable people. What could be more honorable than putting this threat to rest? And so one person on the team says, I don't like it. This is an assassin's job, not a bounty hunter's. And somebody says, we've done worse for less. 200,000 credits for 8 marks, that's practically a steal. So I guess they're saying it's not much. And Bush says, don't get careless. The thugs are, the TAGs are an old human dynasty. They've had centuries to grow their power and influence. I've lost family once. I don't want to lose it again. And I love this page because the shadows of the TAG family in space, they look like they're teleporting in, and you see Bush's helmet.
Yeah, that's
profile really, there. Really yeah. Great.
So I enjoy and, that.
Right. And then we cut to Inquisitor TAG space, and Domina TAG is really not. She's testing out some equipment, a plasma blade, and she's really not impressed with how it's working.
And we're seeing aside, we already know from our previous exposure to Domina Taga in the pages of Dr. Aphra, of how ruthlessly efficient she is in running the family corporation. But seeing her actually testing the plasma blade itself, not relying on some functionary, but doing it herself, goes to show you that she is not somebody who is a hands-off manager. She is very much hands-on, and we see her, her sort of corporate attitude, she's talking to, Lapin, who again, one of her cousins who's also in the family, and, he's explaining, the plasma blade is functioning as expected. However, its energy consumption is higher than projected, and she's just, that's unacceptable. Inform Silas that I expect his next iteration of the TAG protoblade to meet our standards. this will absolutely be reflected on his next performance review. So, and of course, she is walking the walk and talking the talk and fighting the fight, in a bid to test this blade out. Knocking over one of her underlings, get up, Lieutenant Fletchland. This test run isn't over yet. Yes, Lady Domina. And just, everyone below, watching this is, wow, Lady Domina is incredible. And of course, Lapin says, she is. So
she tells her underlings, well done, you've earned a break, which is great. And here's where she notices that one of them is Forth. One of them is named Forth, who's one of their underlings there. And this person says the Empire will never pay for it. And this person says, is that because it's cost ineffective for mass deployment? She says, yes, Forth. And that's when we learn this is your first year aboard the Inquisitor, correct? Yes, ma'am. It's an honor, ma'am. She says, I'm so glad to see you're learning how the TAG Corporation operates. Young TAGs like you are the future of the company. You'll have to excuse me. I have a meeting to attend. And then she's leaving, Forth is just, she knows my name. And then we learn that everybody's there. So they're just basically waiting on her and she's making them wait. And this is where Lapin says, Forth, is Layla's son correct? One of the people on the board, she says, yes. She says, good, then she'll be on her best behavior, lest something unfortunate happen to him. His family's a nest of vipers. Dozens of relatives and stakeholders, every one of them is a threat. Any sign of weakness is an invitation to bury a knife in your back. I learned that lesson early. After the second assassination attempt, I decided I was done being a pawn. I was a player, and the game was mine to win. And so we're getting her whole backstory, which we already know because we read every comic that comes out. But I like this because if you haven't ever read one and you don't know who this character is, if you've only been reading War of the Bounty Hunters, this gives you a good idea of who she is.
Oh, totally, totally. Yeah, because if you've not been reading Dr. Aphra, and again, why do you hate comics if you're not reading Dr. Aphra?
Exactly.
She is an unknown quantity to you. She is a name that you may remember from, the original Volume 1 Marvel. But now we're seeing how more important she is. And again, I think we're also seeing seeds planted for the Crimson Reign miniseries. Because it's obviously very clear, based on what we've seen from Margot, that Domina Taga and the Taga Corporation and family are a threat to Crimson, to the nascent Crimson Dawn, and might as well take them out immediately. So
right, and so she leaves and she tells Lapin, you don't have to protect me. I need your eyes and ears on Forth and the other interns while I speak with their parents. Let's get this over with, because she has her honor guard with her.
Yeah,
and so she shows up, and we meet everybody in the family, and they're all complaining because she's late, and how their issues are the most important.
This page is so dynamic, though.
I love the way it's set up.
It's a full page view. We're looking at it from the end of the conference table, and we're just seeing Ormond Taga, head of manufacturing; Ulrich Taga, head of public relations and messaging; Adelaide and Felix Taga, heads of finance; Brace Taga, Falcon, imperial officer; Layla Taga, Falcon, head of talent acquisition; Silas Taga, head of weapons development. And then above them, almost like this, very narrow vertical banner above each one of them is them, complaining. Like you said, Domina's late. Another plan, Ormond. The last was nearly as great as a fiasco as a Death Star. And it would have bankrupted the company. Quite disastrous, dear. Little minds, little imagination. You can't put a price on genius and innovation. First you need genius and innovation. I don't see any of this at the table. Where is Domina? The Empire doesn't run on her time, and neither should we. Domina walks in, and yet you do.
I love that.
I mean, she walks in with, literally, behold the field in which I grow my I don't give a damn. And we didn't say it the other way because we know that there are kids who listen. So
exactly.
And she goes, welcome aboard the Inquisitor. The first matter I'd like to address today should be my proposal. Did you even read it, Dominic? Yes, it's terrible. Rejected. Told you, Ormond.
Hey, I love it. It's like if he just kept his mouth shut, maybe he could have held out hope a little bit longer.
Yeah. Hey, sis, where's your little secretary? They're our only cousin who doesn't mind living in your shadow, and we need to discuss increasing my division's budget. We have, and the projections simply don't support. Enough! Domino, you owe us answers. When were you planning on telling us about the spies within Taga Corporation? Spies? That's impossible. Apparently not. You probably hired them. What's he talking about, Domino? As if you didn't already know. Don't pretend.
And the way it's written, you can hear them all talking over one another. Just like
exactly.
Doing there.
And that is very good lettering here by Ariana. Don't pretend you haven't been aware of the moles as long as I have. I'm currently investigating the information leaks. And when you discover their source, what are you planning on sharing that information with? Please, Domina doesn't share. And then, an alarm. What's going on? And then, boom, this page. David Baldion. Oh, my God. Just the confidence that Bush is exhibiting here with the blaster.
Yeah.
You know, their comms are down.
So casual.
Locking the rest of the systems now. Good. Kaboom. Ah, don't let a single one of them escape. And then, of course, you know, the siblings, except for Domina, are panicking. You know, oh, right, get the door open. I'm trying. How'd they know we all be here? We're trapped. What are you? And Domina gets up, pulls out the plasma blade. Problem solving. And she cuts a hole in the door. I can't fit through there. Good. Guards, make sure they all stay here. What about us? Are you seriously abandoning us? No, cousin. I'm protecting my interests. And she doesn't just walk away. She glides away with authority.
Yeah. One might even say she struts.
I was going to ask, do you think she's strutting?
Oh, she's absolutely strutting. I think that's all she ever does.
Oh yeah.
And then we see the whole Ubi's crew running, and you know, they're splitting up tags, and this should be on this floor of the ship. Leilani, Herrick, you take that direction. Brian and Tans, follow me. And so they're finding just a bunch of empty rooms. There were two large clusters of heat signatures on this floor. So just keep trying the doors. Eventually we'll find what we're looking for. And they find a bunch of kids. And they said, they're just kids. He said, Herrick, I don't like this at all. He says, hey, put the blaster down. We're not here for you. If we'll leave you be if you just tell us where the executive board is. And and Domina says, it's right here. And I can't tell if she kills or just stuns this person. I guess she probably kills.
Not entirely sure, because you know, I'm not entirely sure, but you know, she does enough to she incapacitates
them. Yeah, both of them. She says now let's see if there are others. And the other three have found the hole in the wall that she left.
Yeah, and the door
the door open. And they start running out, and what is his name? The weapons guy,
Silas
is the first one out. And I love the way they've drawn these guys, because they all have their own unique look. You know, Silas has that long hair, but a receding hairline. And they stun him, and they shoot him in the back and stun him. He says, wait, don't kill me. I hired you. He says, no, you didn't. He goes, I did. How do you think Crimson Dawn knew we'd all be here today? And Boosh says, you sold out your own family. Why? He said, they'll look down on me. They're in my way, especially Donna. She never recognized my genius. Tag Corporation should be mine. And there's Domina again. She says, oh, Silas, you've always been a fool. And I love that she really does just appear. And this is where we get the monologue. And she figured out if someone was a traitor, she had it narrowed down to him, Ulrich, and Layla. She says, Orman wouldn't know discretion if it hit him in the face. Brace is too busy desperately trying to claw his way out of Cassio's shadow. And had already identified all of Adelaide and Felix's spies. Writing yourself out wasn't necessary, but it is vindicating. And Boo starts firing, and he says, Domina Tag, your hollow image doesn't do you justice. Sorry, I've got a job to do. And so everybody else in the room just keeps getting shot. And Domina has reminded us that this weapon she's using is about to melt down. And she asks Boosh, how much are they offering you to kill me? He says, 200,000 for all of you. And she says, 200,000 for eight people, 25,000 apiece? You should have asked for more. And the guys get in, and she tells them, you know, the honor guard gets a drop on them and tells them, you know, drop their blasters. And she says, she basically dismisses everybody. And Orman says, I think leaving you here with mercenaries is a poor decision, especially given what that broken weapon of yours. So don't worry, the protoblade may not work, but my honor guard will protect me. And Boosh says, after all, he still thinks you need protection. After all, he still thinks you need protection. She says, Orman's a simple man. As for you, Silas, I could scold you, but I suppose really your only crime was getting caught. She says, as she stabs him through it just kills him.
Yeah.
Uses the blade one last time.
And then, of course, you know, the gang's like, he was your brother and you killed him. Did I? Or will everyone believe me when I say you did? And the look on her face, she is so coldly calculating. I mean, you know, she makes commerce evil. So, and then
this is where we learn that, you know, Ubi society is isolationist. They really rarely even establish trade with outside. It just took us generations to open those routes. So what's a group of exiles doing here on my ship? And how did Silas, of all people, manage to contact you? And Boosh says, well, he must have hired you. She says, he must have hired you through someone else, an employer, someone who pulls a lot of strings. And
this panel, this middle panel.
Yeah, we see Boosh, and then we see the light from the people behind him. So obviously she didn't kill them. She just knocked him out.
Yeah.
You know, and Boosh says, are you going to kill us? She goes, no, instead of a proposition. You're offered 200,000 credits to kill us all. Tell me what you know about your real employer, and I'll give you 300,000. And I'll help you return to Uba 4.
So that's the magic. That's it right there. You know,
and I think that may be the miniseries that we hopefully will get out of this.
Definitely. When we find out that
no exile's ever been able to make it back, much less reintegrate with society. Our names don't even exist anymore. She says, as I mentioned, we maintain a connection with Uba 4. A little leverage goes a long way. I'm offering you something no one else ever will. Work for me and I'll find a way for you to return to your planet. And you can go home. And that's when we see all of them in the light. And that image is even more striking, I think.
Yeah, because even though they're wearing helmets and masks, you can see the optimism, you know, and the sudden home. You know, I just, so that's incredible.
So what will it be? And then, and you know what they look like? They look like Daft Punk is what they all look like when they're in shadow with the lights going across. Sort of reminds me of, yeah. Or the band Magic Sword. If you're at all familiar with Magic Sword, they're a synthwave band. Look them up if you're listening. Trust me, you'll enjoy it.
Yeah, you just saw them in concert recently.
No, I didn't. No? That was The Sword.
Oh, The Sword. Okay.
The Sword opening for Primus, which that was a killer concert. No, Magic Sword is actually touring with a band called Avatar right now. So it ends with Boosh saying, what do you know about a group called Crimson Dawn? As they're shaking hands. And again, that's a great final image. And you know what else their headsets and everything remind me of? Is the you remember Star Trek II, when Khan's people showed up and at the beginning and surprised Terrell and Chekhov, and they're in their garb, their desert garb. That's what it reminds me of as well.
Oh, yeah, you're right. Yeah, that's a good call. That's a really good call.
And so that's where we ended. And it says, of course, to be continued in Dr. Aphra, which isn't the next book that comes out. So it's going to be interesting to see what happens, because the next one we have for next week, what have we got?
Well, we have Bounty Hunters number 16. And we have the start of the 5-issue weekly miniseries, Ghost of Vader's Castle.
Oh.
Yeah. And then for you manga fans. And then for you manga fans, we should have Star Wars Rebels Volume 2.
Excellent.
Yeah. It's going to be very interesting.
So I highly recommend this Boosh book, especially since it seems like it's kind of an issue zero of maybe a forthcoming miniseries, I hope.
It is.
Anybody at Marvel is listening.
It is a very compelling book, you know, and it's, you know, I got to admit, these Bounty Hunter one-shots have all had their respective high points. And, you know, never underestimate the value of a one-shot. You know,
because
you can do a lot in a one-and-done. And typically, if a one-and-done does really well, it becomes more than a one-and-done.
Well, and especially not, you can do a lot when it's an extended issue, because this was, I think, 34 pages. So,
yeah,
it's a $4.99 book, but well worth it. So we got those two for next week. So we'll be back next week to discuss those. Until then, for Star Wars Splash Page, I'm Jeff.
And I am Matt.
And may the Force be with you.
Always.
The Star Wars Splash Page theme song is Mark Hamill Can Handle by Chris Cape. Check Chris out at chriscape.com and on SoundCloud, on Twitter at Chris Cape, and on Facebook.
Stop peeing!
Mom, that's Megan. Answer it.